Good morning, colleagues.
Good morning.
Good to see you bright and early. Welcome to the Joint Committee on Legislative Administration. Today is March 29th, 2017.
So we can start, so you and your command decisions. I'm not interested where you are late.
The senators have arrived. Clearly. Begin. We're going to start with, I'm going to open up an organizational meeting. First meeting of the session, colleagues, we have to adopt committee rules. Mr. Co-Chair?
I move that the committee adopt the committee rules.
No. Is there any discussion on the committee rules, which are on order?
He did. It's in red. Everything's right there. All
any
red.
Objection? Seeing none, we have rules. Close the organizational meeting on the adoption of committee rules. We have three more senators. Good morning. So we have items on the legislative branch building policy, legislative branch contracting rules, and an appointment with the Oregon State Capital Foundation. And then we'll move to an informational meeting to get an update on the Capital Accessibility Maintenance and Safety Project, also known as CAMS. So I'm going to open a public hearing on each, the branch building use policy, the branch contracting rules, and then the foundation appointment. We'll do a hearing, then we'll do a public work session, and there'll be a vote on each. So. And all these items that you need are online with the committee meeting materials. With that, I will open a public hearing on the legislative branch building use policy. Good morning, Darren.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Darren Hill. I'm the legislative administrator. As you remember, I started here in July. You appointed me in September. And as after I came on board, one of the things that happened were I don't think the building rules had been enforced consistently over time. So what I did is I went to leadership and I said, I think we need to either have consistent rules and have them be enforced all the time, or we need to change the rules. And the word back to me was that let's enforce the rules. Well, legislative council said, that since they hadn't been enforced consistently, it would probably be good for us to have the committee reaffirm the rules and say that that's the case, that these are the building rules. Along those lines, what also happened is a couple other things had come up that had been outliers for a long period of time that hadn't been addressed in the building rules. And so what you see here are the rules. They're in edited form, so you can see what used to be there. The biggest thing is there's a summary of the building use policy now in the first section. That section of the rules has been taken and put on signs that are inside all the doors as people come through. So the state police, they requested this. It's worked out really well. Folks can come through the doors, and you can point them right to what the rules are. So there are a couple of suggested changes to the rules. The first one is that the smoking policy be adopted for the building that had already been adopted for the personnel rules. Last January, you adopted personnel rules that made it very specific there was no smoking on the grounds or the steps. All this does is make it consistent with that. The building use policy still had the 10-foot rule from the building. So all this is doing is make it consistent for everyone, not just the folks that were already personnel within the legislative branch. There is a small wording change. The state police, it said in here that they shall act on behalf of the legislative administration. They technically cannot enforce building rules. They can only enforce laws. So it now has been changed to may act. It's also, there's a change in here that no longer allows open flames on the Capitol grounds or steps. There's an exception for barbecues from the legislative administrator. And it also now prohibits the use of drones on the Capitol grounds. There's also an exception for that one from the legislative administrator. There are a few little minor wording changes that don't change any of the other rules, but just, clean up things that council did as they went through. With that, I'd take any questions.
Thank you, Darren. Questions? I've got Representative Barnhart, then Senator Hansel, and Senator Gerard. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. I'm a little confused about the smoking rule that's been proposed here under item X. I guess that means 10. It appears, and maybe it's because I don't know what the words mean. It appears in one part of the sentence to say that smoking is not allowed in the Capitol, on the steps, on the grounds, in any courtyard, in the underground parking structure. And then it says, or within 10 feet of any entrance, exit, window that opens or ventilates, and so forth. those appear to be contradictory to me, because unless I misunderstand what the words capital grounds means, the capital grounds extend much further away than 10 feet from any of those entrances, exits, windows, and so forth. Can you help me understand that that apparent contradiction?
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, I think there are places, and I haven't taken a tape measure, where the sidewalks are within 10 feet of some people's windows and some of the doors. And so I think that's trying to address that, just in case there is any places like that.
Okay, then I have another question that goes along with that, if I may. Do we have authority to write a rule about the sidewalk? I guess that's another question of how far out does the Capitol grounds extend. In most places, the city owns the sidewalk and the street between the two sidewalks. I don't know if that's true in Salem or not.
Madam Chair, can I ask Dexter to come forward?
You sure can.
I mean, the point of the, well, the question is, can we write a rule that purports to apply to the city sidewalk?
Sure.
Madam Chair, members, good morning. Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council. Representative Barnhart, the city owns the sidewalks, and that is not what is considered Capitol grounds. You could, through legislation, address that, but not through LAC rules.
I would submit that that's a problem with the way this is drafted. And that's the end of my comment.
Duly noted. Thank you, Representative Senator Hansel.
Well, I had a question similar to that on the smoking. When we talk about the grounds, are we talking about all the grassy area and everything as well?
Madam Chair, Senator Hansel, the grounds, the grassy areas, the like, that is actually, for the most part, an Oregon State Park, and it's controlled by the Parks and Rec Department. There may be some things like the planters here and the like that would aren't considered steps and aren't part of the park either, and that would be covered as Capitol grounds.
Follow up?
Yes.
So I guess maybe another question, the smoking public, if you will, that come to visit the Capitol, where would they be able to smoke on this big block area that I kind of viewed as the grounds?
Madam Chair, Senator Hansel, the city sidewalks are one location where they, at the time, unless the city of Salem changes whatever its rules are, they are able to smoke at that in at those locations. I believe the state park that surrounds the Capitol, there is a policy that has been adopted by the executive branch that prohibits smoking on that. But that's an executive branch decision.
Thank you, Dexter. Senator Drott?
Thank you, Chair. Senator Burdick and I have a concern. I haven't talked to her about this yet, but about animals are generally prohibited in the Capitol with the exception of service animals. Is there any way that we could just add the word documented service animals, since that seems to be a problem that we had in one of her committees?
I do.
I don't think it's a problem to do that. I will say that the state police probably will have a difficult time enforcing that unless people are carrying their documentation with them. So I think that's the concern the state police has, is if somebody says this is my service animal, they can enforce it from there if they want. But I think that was the issue that they had presented to me.
Madam Chair?
Follow-up?
If I may. The problem is everybody claims it's a service animal. I mean, they know that's the way around it, and it's not just for the Capitol. It's in restaurants now. It's everywhere. Well, this is my service animal, and it's just not a legitimate use of the animal. So.
Thank you, Senator. My general take is, from an ADA perspective, I don't think we want to be judging people's service animals from a liability perspective. Senator Farrelly?
Thank you, Madam Chair. At risk of entering into this barking dog debate, I think a reasonable and rather simple remedy would simply be to limit the Capitol building to seeing eye dogs and avoid the whole question of service animals other than seeing eye dogs. So, you know, I have a sense that as with other folks, we have seen relatively easy access to service animal dog draping and coats, which are purchasable on the internet. They have no relativity to any therapeutic value established through need by a diagnosis. You just buy the coat.
Senator Montes Anderson, would you like to weigh in on that?
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really, really would not want to focus it just on seeing eye because of all of the mental health issues that we have in this state and with our veterans and with people who really find animals it's a treatment. I mean, it really does make a difference in their mental health. And so I would hope we would not go down that path. Thank you.
If I could make it, Representative Smith.
Madam Speaker, I don't want to take away from this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just on this particular topic, given the complexity of it, and with all, you know, I hear your concerns, I think perhaps we could ask staff to look at that and see if there is a way to maybe clarify that with, you know, and taking all these concerns into account. I don't think we're going to solve it today. And I want, you know, if we're going to put into the building rules, we should probably make sure we have really thought it through a little bit because I do think it's relatively complex. On this topic, Senator Burke?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. One suggestion, the incident that we were referring to was we had a hearing in the Rules Committee on making various breeds the state dog, and during that hearing we had two very large dogs who did not get along.
Pyrenees,
yes. And they were wearing their vests. So, you know, one suggestion would be, if we're going to play with these rules at all, would be to tie something to the behavior of the dogs to give us some remedy, because we were facing almost the probability of a dog fight right here in the
on this side of the counter.
For once, not on this side of the counter. Yes.
Thank you for that suggestion, Senator. Any more on the animal issue?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Darren, you might check with Department of Ag. They've got clear posters and rulings on ADA and on service animals. And I recently supplied those to the Dalles because there were some restaurant questions and whatnot. Restaurant food is a little different situation than what we're talking here, but their rules are pretty clear.
Thank you, Representative.
Anything else on animals? Moving on, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Darren, can you share with us, who do these rules apply to in terms of this building? Does it include the executive branch and the Secretary of State?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, yeah, these rules apply to anybody who comes to the building.
Thank you.
Including our tenants.
Our tenants. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Representative McLean? Mm-hmm.
Question for Dexter. Based on the interpretation of outside, you know, but the parks being under the control of ultimately the executive branch and sidewalks controlled by the city of Salem, these rules that we're adopting, do they only apply then to the literal building and what's inside it?
Madam Chair, Representative McLean, they apply to the building, what's inside it, including the garage. They apply to the steps and other ingress and egress into and out of the building. And they apply to Capitol grounds, which is kind of the way these rules work, a catch-all for those areas that aren't part of the park. And I believe, for example, these planters out here are an example of that. That's actually the only one I can think of. But where it isn't part of the park, the rules apply to that as well.
And a follow-up.
Follow-up? Mm-hmm.
So a
–
no designated smoking area is not necessarily a big leap, since I'm trying to think of where someone could. We used to have an within one of the other areas. Yeah.
Madam Chair, Representative McLean, based on the old rule, there was a very small area within the courtyards that was where smoking was allowed. And this change will eliminate that.
Okay, then can I follow up? Mm-hmm. So were there complaints, or well, I should ask Darren or something, what's so wrong with Darren? Why not have a designated smoking area, maybe in the courtyard, or if we can accommodate people or guests? I don't help me understand. Why are we doing this then?
Madam Chair, Representative McLean, I'm not sure what the genesis was of that. All I will say is that this is currently in the personnel rules, the smoking policy, the way that it's being adopted here. So this has been in place since last January for anybody who was an employee of the legislative branch. I don't know, because I wasn't here then, what the reasoning was to eliminate a smoking area, but so I can't help you.
Okay, well then, Madam Speaker, I'm against this then. There is nothing wrong with accommodating our guests with a designated smoking area like we've had. And you know, if we want to dictate private choices for our employees, I think that's wrong. But nevertheless, somebody did it in January or 2 years ago or something, but it just seems to take out a designated smoking area, as Senator Hansel has indicated for our guests, and you know, is in and the like. I just don't agree with.
And thank you for your comments, Representative McLean. I don't recall this topic at all when we did the personnel rules. My recollection, that was part of the global rewrite of some of the personnel rules at the time.
Yes, it
I
was.
I don't think it was separated out. But so I don't remember the genesis of that. My guess is it's the proximity to the door and the smoke coming in the door, which is the 10, you know, foot rule, which is also the state law. So I don't know if there's a way. I think we'd have a hard time having space in the courtyard that it was away from the doors, and that might be part of the reasoning. I'm trying to remember the courtyard. I haven't been down there in a while.
Madam Chair, I think that is part of the issue. I think that there was probably a little small space in the middle of the courtyard that you could probably stand in and be 10 feet away from the entire building, but it would be out. I think if there's grass there, and I think that was the issue, is, you know, probably technically you could be legal there, but I'm not sure, you know.
Because state law is 10 feet away from.
Madam Chair, yes, that's correct.
Correct. So, you know, I hear what you're saying. We could take it under advisement. I'm not sure we have other options. I think the fact that you could be away from the rain was part of the issue in the courtyard as well for people to smoke. So I'm not sure what we can do vis-a-vis state law in the courtyard, but we can look into it. But if you feel you have to vote no today because of that, I totally hear you. So.
Well, Madam Chair, I am going to vote no, because we are being inhospitable to some of our guests here who do smoke. It is a legal substance. We're debating now whether it should be banned to anyone under 21. And but to not accommodate, and when we are bending over backwards, Lord knows, to accommodate everyone under every circumstances. And then we're saying, except for you people who smoke. And I just think that, I don't know, it's distasteful. Whether you know, and I understand that people who don't like smoking and they wish they could ban it in people's homes. But the reality is we do have guests here. This is the people's house, and some guests do smoke, and we have a designated area. I don't see why we're banning it.
When my wife visits, she would be required to smoke on the sidewalk away from a window that could open or door could open 10 feet away. Due to the law that we have passed, that is the law of the land in this state, related to open air. So we'll have to figure this out, but I hear what you're saying. Further comments on the rules?
I move that the committee adopt the proposed revisions to the building use policy.
Senator Cornyn moves the committee adopt the proposed revisions to the building use policy. Discussion on the motion?
Discussion.
Well, excuse me, we're actually, one moment. Other discussion, I have to get us out of the public hearing here.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question that relates to who actually controls the parking structure. Earlier this year, we had a debate about whether it is the legislative branch or it was Department of Administrative Services or the executive branch. So whose authority is it that controls the parking structure under the building? Did we ever set that out, Madam Chair?
I can answer that. Madam Chair, Senator Ferrielli, the Legislative Assembly controls the parking garage under this building. Department of Administrative Services controls the parking garage under the big one to the north.
Madam Chair, I appreciate that clarification. I know we had a lot of correspondence firing back and forth, and I don't ever remember hearing that it settled somewhere. So thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Further questions on the rules, Representative Huffman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just clarification. So if we adopt the rules, does that mean that there is that's the end of the discussion on potential smoking in the courtyard? If I bring my tape measure in and determine that they can actually be 10 feet and we could set up a little awning in the middle and they, I mean, does it stop the discussion?
Yes. It stops the discussion for today. But if you would like to bring a recommendation of the presiding officers on how best to resolve this, I'm open to that. But we can't do that today, so it's not before us. Any other discussion on the building rules? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session on adoption of the changes to the legislative branch building use policy. Co-Chair Courtney?
I move that the committee adopt the proposed revisions to the building use policy.
Senator Courtney moves that the committee adopt the proposed revisions to the building use policy. For the discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator.
With your statement on the record that Legislative Administrative Committee would help us research potential changes to policy for further consideration, not only in smoking, but on the service dog issue, I'm prepared to support the rule.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? Are there objections to the motion? No, for the record, Senator McLean, Senator Hansel, or excuse me, Representative McLean and Senator Hansel. Motion passes. Close the work session on legislative branch building use policy. Open a public hearing on legislative branch contracting rules.
Madam Chair, this is another, you had adopted some contracting rules last January also. What has happened is, as we have proceeded with the capital, accessibility, maintenance, and safety project, it's come to our attention that there was part of the code that was not addressed, and that is specifically for architectural and engineering kind of contracts. This is something that the executive branch has. It's in statute, it's in ORS, and all this is really doing is allowing us to use that part of the code. It had not been addressed before because traditionally we don't do architectural and engineering kinds of contracts. So what this does is it takes the contracting rules that were approved and it adds a section that basically allows, as I said, the contracting rules available to the executive branch with regards to architectural and engineering contracts. Contracts can be directly awarded for architectural and engineering items not to exceed $100,000. You can actually directly award one of those contracts for $250,000 if it's new work, if the new work is substantially related to work under an existing contract. And so that's basically the one and only change to the contracting rules that you've already adopted.
Thank you, Darren. Senator Gerard, discussion.
Yeah, I have a question. Is there anything that requires us to take the lowest bid?
Madam Chair, Senator Gerard, as counsel has stated, the answer is no.
Senator Gerard, follow up?
That does bother me if you're going to contract out. I mean, if you're going to put out contracts, why put out contracts or put out bids if you're not going to take the lowest bid? So,
Darren, do you want to?
Oh, I think, Madam Chair, I think what this is talking about is actually not going and getting bids, but to be able to award contracts for these levels directly. And the main reason is because these companies, especially the situation we were in, They had done some work on the original Oscar project, and for us to go out there, it was specific to groundwater. They had done some studies, and any other engineering company would not accept their data that they had gone out and gotten. So you have to go with the same company, essentially, or it's going to be substantially more expensive. So what this allows us to do is to award those contracts directly without having a bid process.
Okay.
Yep, Senator Fergie. Oh, I'm sorry. Did we have Representative Barnhart?
No, that question was answered.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm concerned that I certainly understand the item where we would do direct award at under that $100,000. But what I am concerned about is if you hired a contractor, any contractor who tears into this building immediately acquires special knowledge because it's so special here. If you looked at some of the inspection panels that were open during, our investigation of seismic readiness of this structure, you realize that the 1934 section of the building were built, at a time largely before codes, mm-hmm. in some cases. So any contract that you let will give that contractor special knowledge. And to allow that contract to be kicked up to $250,000 and then endlessly extended with architectural projects broken into $248,000 bites doesn't give me a high level of confidence that we can point to our contracting policy and assure the public that we're not just engaging in sweetheart deals, most favored contractor status, rolling $250,000 authorization up to $50 million, or with really no limit. So I'd like to hear that addressed, Madam Chair.
Certainly, Senator.
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, David, can you come up? I think the issue here is I don't think there would be a rolling kind of a contract. I personally would never allow that to happen. As the folks in this building will tell you, I'm pretty hardcore about us making sure we're following all the rules and going above and beyond the competitive part of whatever we're required to do. But David, can you speak to the fact of being able to roll time and time again?
Yes.
And please introduce yourself for the record. Thank you.
My name is David Fanyan, Deputy Legislative Counsel. To Darren's question, the Rule 11, which provides for direct awards for a limited set of professional types of contracts, well, has a couple of elements I want to point out that might address the concern. One is that this is permissive in the discretion of the contracting entity. They're certainly not required to let the contract to whoever did the previous work. Paragraph D requires the entity to document in writing the reasons for selecting the contractor. So to put something in the record, documenting the reasons, and then somebody asking the question later can decide whether those are good or bad reasons. As to the question of breaking up the work, these rules generally don't allow for what we call artificial separation of work. But, of course, that's a very hard thing to define in a general sense for all the types of contracts that the branch does. It's not impossible that a large contract could be drafted into several $240,000 contracts, but as I mentioned, the requirement to document any contracts let under this rule provides at least a paper trail for audit purposes.
Senator?
Madam Chair, it answers the question. Nothing prevents it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Other than the due diligence of staff and presiding officers. Yes.
Madam Chair, due diligence is a personally defined parameter, and audit trails are good for watching the rearview mirror after you've passed the destination. So, you know, although I very much appreciate the opportunity to have the discussion, the experience with other public works projects is that we do have most favored contractors and we do have rolling authorizations. I would like to hear somebody say, but our rules prevent that. So that is a concern, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Well, we could add additional sideboards. We can have another conversation about that. I think we're trying to get at that, but it's always worth maybe we'll continue
our
conversation.
A swing and a miss, Madam Chair, but I appreciate your willingness to further evaluate.
I think it's a single, at least. Maybe a double. I don't think it's a total swing and miss. Representative Smith?
Madam Chair, if I could real quick, I would be more than open to setting those sideboards. I would. Yeah. It, to me, it's very important, and so I would be more than open to having that in there.
Madam Chair, if I might just indulge for another second. We hire the folks that do this work because we're convinced of their integrity. And we rely on that. But trust but verify is always a good policy. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Senator. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Darren, can you share with me under Contracting Authority 1C, who's our Natural Resources Policy Administrator?
I'm sorry, what section are you looking at, Representative?
It's on page 2, item number 3. It lists the persons who are authorized by statute to enter into contracts.
Oh.
It says ledge council, fiscal officer, ledge admin, ledge rev, speaker, president, and it says natural resources policy administrator. I've never heard of this position, or who are they?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I looked this up because it's in here. In statute, there is a person there. I don't think anyone's ever been in that position. I'm not sure that anyone has ever been put there. But it is in statute, like these others. That's where this language came from. It's in statute that says these folks have the ability to have the contracting authority.
I'm just glad I'm not crazy. I was thinking down in general government.
Would you like that job, like, Representative Smith?
What's that?
Would you like that job?
No.
Senator?
Well, Madam Chair, we created the Natural Resources Policy Administrator in statute. We had designated a Natural Resources Policy Administrator, and after having the benefit of about an interim of services from a Natural Resources Policy Administrator, the governor released the person who we had hired, and we have never had another one hired because apparently we don't really care about Natural Resource Policy Administration except from the environmental perspective. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, I think we're all going to want to look at that statute and find out what that's about. Any other questions or discussion on the branch contracting rules? Now we'll close the public hearing, open a work session on the branch contracting rules. Mr. Co-Chair?
Move that the committee adopt the proposed revisions to the legislative branch contracting rules.
Co-Chair Senator Courtney moves that the committee adopt the proposed revisions to the legislative branch contracting rules. Is there any discussion? Senator Farioli.
I will object until we have some language that prevents sweetheart contracts and rolling authorizations.
Look forward to further clarification there. Thank you, Senator. Any other further discussion? So we have one objection. Any other objections? Representative McLean, Senator Farioli. Motion passes. Close the work session. Open a public hearing and possible work session on the Oregon State Capital Foundation appointment. You go, Darren.
Sorry, Madam Chair. As you know, in statute, the Legislative Administration Committee has to approve any appointments to the Capital Foundation. The Nomination Committee has brought someone before you today.
Thank you, Darren. Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm Ed Shopes. I'm a current member of the Oregon State Capital Foundation.
Good to see you, Ed. And my assumption is you are the appointment.
He is
the reappointment.
The nomination is to be reappointed.
I was going to say. That's what I thought. So
I had filled my appointment previous was for a vacation on the committee, and this
right.
Would be an appointment for a full.
Thank you for the clarification,
thank you,
Ed.
Madam Chair.
And thank you for your service so far. And Ed's resume is in OLAS. Any questions for Ed on his service to the foundation and his reappointment? Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you. I would just say that Ed does a fantastic job on the board, and he's a very active member, heading up committees and getting a lot of work done. And thank you.
Thank you, Ed. It's good to see you.
Good to know.
We are in possible work session. Mr. Co-Chair.
I move that the committee reappoint Ed Schwoops to the Oregon State Capital Foundation.
Co-Chair Senator Courtney moves that the committee reappoint Ed Schwoops to the Oregon State Capital Foundation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Thank you, Ed. Welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you for your continued service. With that, we'll close the public hearing and work session on the Oregon Capital Foundation appointment, and we will open an informational meeting on the update on the Capital Accessibility Maintenance and Safety Project.
Madam Chair, if I could, I'd like to bring Marina Crespo forward. She's the project manager for the project.
So, colleagues, we just wanted to keep you in the loop on what's happening here in the building. So, I believe there's a document on OLIS. You also have the project schedule in front of you. That is on OLIS as well. So, Marina, all yours.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Marina Cresswell. I'm the project manager for CAMS, which is the Capital Accessibility Maintenance and Safety Project. I'm here to provide you an update on the project that was approved in the 2016 legislative session.
Marina, could you move the mic a little closer? Please?
I was here in September and gave you an overview of the project and some of the work that we were expecting to accomplish under the project. I'm here to tell you some of the things that we've done so far and let you know what our next steps are as we move forward. We have, in the intervening months, we have moved the revenue office temporarily to room 354. The move was necessary to make way for the new north exit stairs and also for the new location for Oregon State Police on the first floor. Their permanent location will actually be in room 160 once it has been configured to fit their needs. The design for that is mostly complete. That room will not be vacated until July of 2017. In the meantime, they're temporarily in room 354. Once the room is vacated, it will take approximately 3 to 4 months to rebuild the space and move them into it. We have also merged the information services first floor staff into their ground floor space. That was in total, smaller space than what the groups had occupied in the two separate spaces. We needed to move them to make way for Oregon State Police, again, moving up to the first floor. In order to get information services to fit into that slightly smaller space, we did have to move the Oregonian north. We shifted them slightly, and we relocated the register guard to a different office in the press area. And we also had to construct some new offices down in room 40 and completely change the layout to be able to fit them into that smaller space. We have moved the Oregon State Police temporarily into a space on the first floor. That is a temporary location because it was a priority to have them on the first floor prior to the start of session. We were unable to get all of the other moves completed in time to configure their new permanent location prior to session, so we have moved them upstairs. They are in a portion of Revenue's former office. In the meantime, we have recently completed bid drawings for Oregon State Police's permanent location. We're reviewing those right now, and we hope to be out posted for bidding within the next 2 weeks and have the work complete in that space before the end of session. We've completed a solicitation for the relocation of the Camperdown Elms and two other non-historic trees. The elms are having to be relocated in order for us to do the construction of the new mechanical vaults on either side of the Capitol. We're in the process of executing a contract, and we anticipate that the trees will be relocated over a two to three week time frame in April, assuming that the weather cooperates with us. We will give plenty of notification. We also expect that many folks will want to watch. We are going to be doing it via a crane, so it should be pretty interesting. We are currently working on design of a reconfigured suite for Treasury. They will be occupying a smaller footprint than they currently do. Again, we need to make room for the new north exit stairs, so this is dependent on that. And we're in discussion with the governor's staff currently about where they will move after they leave 160 at the end of July. We have made a decision on the remainder of the work to solicit that work for construction with a construction manager, general contractor type of contract. In large part, that allows us to get a contractor on board early and gets them up and running as quickly as possible. They get to know the team. They start to understand the complexities of the project prior to actually starting construction. We won't be starting construction on the larger project until after session is over, but we do want to get somebody on board as quickly as we can so that we can gain the benefit of having them there and minimize the amount of time that's necessary to get the construction itself started. We've been doing more detailed assessment of existing conditions in the building. One of the challenges of moving from the Oregon State Capitol renovation project to the Capitol Accessibility Maintenance and Safety Project is that the Oregon State Capitol renovation intended to get rid of many existing pieces of equipment, a lot of existing infrastructure, and as we now go into CAMS, we are keeping selectively pieces of equipment and infrastructure. We cannot get rid of everything. So now we need to go back and do a much better assessment of what actually exists so we can determine what we have to get rid of and what we can keep. So that's taking us some time as we go through and do those assessments of the existing conditions. One of the other things that changed between the Capitol renovation and CAMS is that under the Capitol renovation, the building was going to be unoccupied during the construction. Under CAMS, it will continue to be occupied. And what that means for us is that in many cases, we will be building parallel systems to allow the Capitol to continue running for the operation of the building under the existing system until we have our new systems in place. That means that we have to look very carefully at where things are located. We're trying to fit twice as much into the same space in order to do this, but it allows us to minimize the interruption to the operations of the Capitol. And I think that that is a good segue to talking about some of the other design challenges that have come about as we get into CAMS. Under the state capital renovation, many parts of the design were neatly interdependent. It was a well-thought-out design. It was very well integrated. And there were a number of things that sort of built on each other. Under CAMS, we're pulling out certain elements of the capital renovation project, which means we now have to relook at how those elements will work with the existing building and how they will work with each other. For example, we are doing the mechanical vaults on either side of the building, but we're not doing any structural work under the central part of the building, the 1938 structure. That changes our structural conditions for the vaults. So it changes our structural design for the vaults as well. These are things that we're having to go through and solve as we do the design for the project.
Madam Chair.
Can we hold questions to the end? Thank you, Senator.
As we're looking at some of these elements, we do have some concern right now that it may endanger the timeline of the project, and so we want to be upfront about that, that there are some things that are unintended consequences of doing just a portion of the work that was originally designed. As I said, we continue going through and solving those issues as we come across them, but there are some unknowns as we're doing that design work. Our next steps, we are continuing on the design process for that larger package of work. We anticipate building out Oregon State Police's permanent location. As I mentioned before, we've got the relocation of the Camperdown Elms coming up in April. And our intent is to have full construction documents for the larger package of work in July. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Maria, and thank you, Senator.
You're up first.
Being new to the committee, I wasn't sure what mechanical vault is referring to. If you could explain that, please.
Madam Chair, Senator, thank you for the question. The mechanical vaults are two infrastructure vaults that will be occurring on either side of the 1938 structure. So they will be essentially below the east and west entry to the building. So where you currently have hardscaping that leads up to those east and west entries underground, we will have two large vaults. Those vaults provide locations for us to put all of the new utility infrastructure that is coming into the building. We have things that we need to do as part of CAMS that include moving our electrical feed to the into the building. We're doing that because our existing electrical feed is in a inferior vault, in fact, a very unsafe vault just outside the building. We will be rerouting it so that we have a safer connection and a more secure electrical connection to the Capitol building. We're also sort of centralizing much of our utility infrastructure into these vaults. For example, our heating system currently is a steam system. The boilers are located outside of the building. They're in a small structure on the grounds. And we are converting from steam to a hot water heating system. And all of those boilers will be within our new mechanical vaults.
Thank you, Senator. It's one of the larger portions of the project. So. Mm-hmm. Senator Courtney.
Thank you. Kujik. Manager Creswell, when is room 160 going to be vacated by the current occupant?
Room 160 is to be vacated by the end of July 2017.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, Father.
How do you know that?
Co-Chair Courtney, members of the committee, I was given that information by the presiding officers that was going to occur. There have been numerous discussions with the governor's staff about that, and I believe that they also have a lease in place that supports that.
Another question.
Mr. Co-Chair, please.
Was there a designation area in the Capitol that the occupants of 160 were to go to prior to... in a master plan sort of way?
Under the state capitol renovation, there was a location that the governor's staff had decided that they would like to use to move to after the renovation was complete. It was approximately room 354.
There was no other designated area in the building that 160 was to go to? Because who is in that area now?
It is the governor's staff, policy advisors, and some of their other staff that are in 160.
But who, the room you just mentioned, who is there now? There's been reorganizations in there. Who is there now?
Thank you, Co-Chair Courtney. Room 354 currently is occupied temporarily by the revenue office. They were able to move into that space because the Legislative Policy and Research Office had agreed to move their staff out and put them into a more confined location in order to open that space up for revenue to occupy temporarily.
So if the occupants of 160 go there, then the revenue office has to go someplace. Is that correct?
The revenue office will go to 160 once it has been configured, but the Legislative Policy and Research Office will still need to have someplace else to go. They were intended to go back to room 354 once it was vacated.
But wait a minute, I don't understand. If they have to get out of 160 so we can remodel 160, and they got to go somewhere, and they want to go where revenue is going to go, so they go revenue wants to go, is now where is revenue going to go during the remodel?
I understand the confusion. I apologize. That was the location that was intended for the governor's staff under the Capitol renovation. Under CAMS, we have an opportunity for them to take space in room 64.
Who's they?
The governor's staff.
Correct.
There is space available for them in room 64 and room 62.
I understand that. But they want to go to where revenue office is. Is that not correct, Manager Creswell?
I have heard that they would like to go to room 354. They would like to take the space that was intended for them under the Capitol.
And if they go there, then revenue's got to move. Is that correct during the remodel?
They would need to find a temporary location until we could move revenue out. Yes.
Thank you, Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And as Marina mentioned at the beginning, there are ongoing discussions and negotiations with the governor's team about the relocation of their staff from 160. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. A matter of information, and I may just have misheard. You're doing a major change with the electrical service coming into the building. If I understood your answer to Senator Bonus Anderson's question correctly, are you allowing sufficient service into the building so you can electrify the parking under this room for electric vehicle charging?
Madam Chair and Representative Barnhart, the service would be sufficient to provide electric car parking in the parking garage. However, that is not, we are not making significant changes to the parking garage under CAMS. But the service will be adequate.
Thank
yes.
you. That was the point of my question.
Thank you, Representative.
There's no point in, if I could, there's no point in building a nice new service if it isn't of sufficient capacity to add these other services later. And I think what I heard was it will be of sufficient capacity.
Yes, and for everyone, the HVAC electrical upgrades are to modernize our current systems to make sure we have future capacity for whatever needs we have. So thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Senator Fraioli?
Ms. Creswell, I don't envy you the complexity of this project since we parsed the question. I hope you'll forgive, Madam Chair, the question about minutia. But what agonizing did you do over the decision to move the trees rather than simply replace the trees?
The trees.
The trees. And I'm interested in, it'll be a fabulous spectacle to watch somebody move mature trees, but the cost is an issue. Well, you know, tell me about that process and how you arrived at the decision to move rather than replace the trees.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli. That's a great question. The trees are actually protected due to their historic status. They're considered included under the National Register nomination for the building and the grounds from that particular period of significance, which was the construction of the central portion of the building, 1934 to 1938. So because they are protected status, they are under regulatory review by the State Historic Preservation Office, as well as the City of Salem and their Landmarks Commission. With those things in mind, under the Oregon State Capitol renovation, we had done a significant amount of work with the State Historic Preservation Office, reviewing all of the items that would impact the National Register nomination or what's included in it. We had a certain number of things that we had to do as mitigation, and each element had to be reviewed for a potential adverse effect. They were, not supportive of us eliminating the trees.
Thank you for the question.
Follow-up, sure. I have limited experience with the National Historic Registry, although some folks in the district I represent have availed themselves of those designations. I did not. I don't remember hearing or seeing the rules that required vegetation to be maintained. So if you could email me something about that offline, I'd like to familiarize myself with the idea that vegetation is also protected, which leads me to this question. What happens if you kill those trees? If your best intention fails to produce live transplants, who's got liability? Who's going to jail? That's what I want to know.
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, if
ultimately,
those trees die, I'm leaving the country.
Madam Chair, I think we owe Ms. Creswell a list of countries which have weak extradition laws.
We are unable to ensure something that cannot be replaced, which is to say that we cannot replace the historic material. We could certainly replace with something relatively similar. However, getting it to that age and that stature would be difficult to do. There are other historic Camperdown Elms within the grounds of the Capitol Should one of the four that are outside the east and west entries fail to thrive, we could potentially try to relocate again another one. However, I don't think that would be worth our time.
Oh, the humanity. Madam Chair, can I just almost hesitate?
Quickly,
to ask,
I think we all have 9:30.
The cost of removing and replanting the trees, please.
We do not have a contract in place yet, so I do not have a cost for you.
When such is let, Madam Chair, I'd like to get a copy of that contract.
Certainly,
thank
Senator.
You, Madam Chair.
I know. Senator Burdick, and then Mr. Yeah. Co-Chair, we'll have the final comment. We do probably have to get along soon. Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was concerned when you said that the configuration of the utilities in the vaults had to be changed as opposed to what they would have been in a full renovation. We're eventually going to have to do the actual renovation. Does that mean we're going to have to go back and redo some of these things that we're paying for now?
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, thank you for asking that question. We are working very diligently to avoid having to go back and redo things. That's part of what creates those design challenges. As we go through the design, we're trying to find ways to do it where we minimize what would need to be redone. I think one of the examples that's been interesting for us is under the capital renovation, we were going to dig out the entire basement area of the 1938 structure. That allowed us to build not only those infrastructure vaults on either side, but a connecting corridor between the two vaults that allows us to connect much of the infrastructure from one side to the other. Without doing the digging out of the basement and all of the seismic work that was occurring there, we no longer have that utility corridor to make our connections. So we are looking at ways to create those connections above, sort of above the floor level, in the ceilings and wherever we need to. But it is definitely a design challenge, and there will be some things that would need to change if the full renovation was funded to be completed. We are looking to minimize as best we can.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Madam
Speaker, you know I try to be a good team player. This conversation's gotten a little awkward for me and for District 57. I genuinely appreciate your professionalism, no doubt about it, and I understand what you've shared with the committee about the statutory requirements behind this. But I just really want to go on the record that the folks in District 57 would have a very difficult time knowing that I was supporting the fiscal cost that will go along with moving this tree, all the opportunity costs that we in this current session have. So I just very quickly want to go on record with that. But I do appreciate the situation before us.
Thank you, Representative. Yeah, we are beholden to the preservation laws,
right.
It is.
And I do acknowledge that.
Further discussion or comments with that? Thank you, everyone. We will close the informational hearing, and perhaps we will be back one more time before session concludes to give you an update. With that, we will close the hearing today on the Joint Committee on Legislative Administration. The hearing today on the Joint Committee on Legislative Administration.